I'm Tom Edwards, and today on the Monocle Arts Review, we're looking ahead to what's on at the cinema with the Telegraph's film critic Tim Robey. We'll be talking about the acclaimed biopic of Jacqueline Kennedy, Jackie, plus the potential Oscar contender Lion, and finally, M. Night Shyamalan's new film, Split. Our first film today is Jackie, with Natalie Portman, of course, playing the role of Jackie Kennedy, Jackie O, depending on how you look at it. Her tour de force performance has already won plenty of accolades. Tim, let's start with that front and centre. People are saying, you know, Oscar shoo-in, her best ever performance in some cases. What do you think?
It's an interesting one because I think it's an extremely bizarre performance. It's very off-putting in some ways, and I think it works brilliantly for the film. But I think it's a lot of it is how she's been directed and how her Chilean director, Pablo Larraín, has used her in a little bit, in a slightly similar way to how she was used in Black Swan, actually. Darren Aronofsky, who made that, was going to make Jackie. Interestingly, he was going to make it at first with Rachel Weisz, but it's wound up with Natalie Portman, his Black Swan star. And I feel as though it uses her in that same way, that kind of porcelain brittleness that she has cracks apart over the course of the film. In fact, really, as biopics go, it's made the very sensible choice of just being about one sliver of Jackie's life. It really deals with the direct aftermath of JFK being shot. It opens with Billy Crudup, who plays a journalist, arriving to interview her in about a week after the tragedy. And I think that's a very good structural choice, and it means that the film can kind of flash back just a little bit to that actual event. And it also goes back to the famous broadcast she made, kind of walking around the White House and telling American audiences about all the decorative changes she was making. But it's a deliberately quite a strange and stilted performance from her. The accent is at first very difficult to kind of process. It's like she's overdone it in a way. And I think the director's doing all of that on purpose to make us feel quite uncomfortable.
Well, let's look then at Pablo Larraín, because first of all, how would you compare this to other pictures? Can you see in some of these choices, which may be a little off kilter, can you see the genesis of those in other bits of work by Pablo Larraín? You can sort of chart that development, can you?
Yeah, very much so. He's a very adventurous filmmaker. This is, what, his fifth or sixth film now. It's his first, I think, in the English language. And I think he's often showed a real flair for kind of, as you say, kind of off-kilter, slightly atonal takes on things. He's actually made, I can't believe this, but in over the course of 2016, he premiered three films, all of which are fantastic. I mean, name the last time a director made three excellent films in the same year. He made a film called The Club, which is about disgraced priests in a kind of halfway house, which premiered in Berlin last year. He made Neruda, which is a sort of, again, a semi-biopic of the poet Pablo Neruda, but told through a kind of dizzying array of devices and with other characters, and Gael Garcia Bernal in a starring role, but not playing him. And now Jackie, which premiered in Venice last year, and which I think is, if anything, the best of the three. But it's, I'm kind of blown away by his skill and his risk taking as a filmmaker.
Well, and just by the output. I mean, that's impressive.
And by the output, it's amazing. Yeah,
And it's interesting. You mentioned with Neruda and this piece the same, managing, I guess, because of some interesting structural choices or narrative choices, to avoid, I guess, a lot of the cliche. And that's probably, well, whether that's the cliche about her life or cliche about making biopics generally, it's pretty important, because I guess a lot of the viewers of certainly Jackie will have a pretty clear idea about her and her, you know, doomed nature and all of these complexities. So it's important, I guess, that he sought to avoid those kinds of easy decisions, if you like.
Very much so. I think biopics can fall into that kind of boilerplate so easily. Whenever I think of them, I think of that spoof movie, Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, where he starts and he says, Dewey Cox has to think about his whole life before he sings. And, you know, it avoids all of that. It really just deals with this splintering of her kind of consciousness directly after the shock of that happening. And as the film goes on, it's quite chilly at first and her performance is quite cold. But then as it goes on, I found it extremely moving, because I just thought this person has been broken apart by what's happened, and all of the structuring and all of the sort of minor characters in it have a part to play in terms of presenting that crisis in her kind of experience. And it's very woozy and kind of almost hallucinatory at times, sometimes you really feel as though you've been put right there on the seat next to the US president as his brains are being blown all over you. I mean, it's pretty full on.
Let's hear a little clip. I think we've got a clip to hear from Jackie. Let's take a listen.
I've grown accustomed to a great divide between what people believe and what I know to be real.
And
And how would you like him remembered?
There should be more horses, more soldiers.
Why are you doing this, Mrs. Kennedy?
There's more crying, more cameras.
This is making us look like barbarians.
What's wrong with you?
You don't have to do this.
I will march with Jack.
Freeze, dead!
Alone, if necessary. I'm not the First Lady anymore. I lost track somewhere. What was real? What was performance?
That's a bit of Jackie starring Natalie Portman. What about the way that Portman captures the sort of iconic... we said it's a story well known. You think of her fashion, for example. Is that sort of a big feature of the film, or does that fade as well into the background somewhat?
No, it is a crucial feature, and it makes a big point out of the fact that that very famous kind of pillbox pink twin set that she wore on that day, she wore during the assassination and then for the kind of, you know, stepping off the plane afterwards and having to confront people. She was stuck in that thing the whole day. But then when she finally goes back to the White House to change, the film makes a big point out of the kind of dollhouse atmosphere of her wandering around, putting on all these different dresses, and she's kind of strung out, she's chain smoking, she's putting on all of her outfits, and then she has to pack them all away because, of course, the White House is about to be taken over by LBJ, who gets sworn in as president within hours of JFK's death. And so this strange sort of purgatory that she's living in, essentially, for that week or whatever it was, when she's not First Lady anymore because her husband's been killed, she's drifting around, they want her out of there, really, and yet they're also making the funeral arrangements, and she's got a pivotal role to play in those. And it becomes a bit of a power play that she kind of wants things done a certain way. But then the Kennedys, of course, have huge authority and influence in terms of the way where they want their son to be buried. And, you know, the kind of the etiquette of a presidential funeral and all of that. And she's kind of fighting to still have her say, really, and to still matter. And she feels as though she's about to be consigned to a footnote in history, like Mary Lincoln was, who died impoverished. And it makes all of those points. I think it's a very clever script. I think it's really brilliantly directed. One of the best directed films of the year. And I mean, I really feel, you know, the focus on Natalie Portman's performance, though very justified, it shouldn't really be allowed to overshadow what's brilliant about the film in other departments. If, you know, in a just world, Pablo Larraín would be getting nominated for best director at the Oscars and winning, I think.
Jackie is out now in the US, Finland and the UK. Should be released soon in other parts of the world as well. Our second film, it's another one-worder, Tim. I don't know if this was deliberate or it's just the way the cookie crumbles. Lion, with Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman, about an Indian boy who's adopted by an Australian couple and then starts a journey to find his actual birth family again. Now, this is another one which is looking set to do pretty well in awards season, which we're kind of in the midst of. What did you make of it?
I think this film is really pretty good, and it's all about the story, the true story, and it's pretty astonishing. If you read a long book or article about this story, you would be kind of riveted by it. It's very much a film of two halves. The first half of the film has this boy as a five-year-old, and he gets separated from his family in India because he strays onto a train which speeds him thousands of miles away from his home. He can't get off it, and when he gets off at the other end, he doesn't speak the language. So he's unable to explain where he came from or, you know, how to get back there. He has the kind of wrong name for his village, which no one understands, and he's essentially orphaned. And then goes through his early years in a series of kind of very, very sketchy circumstances, kind of the social welfare system in India really lets him down. Eventually, he is adopted and sent to live with this Australian couple, played by Nicole Kidman and David Wenham. And then in the second half of the film, it's his adulthood, and Dev Patel, playing him, wants to retrace his steps and try and figure his way back to his family because he's left behind a mother and a brother. And he wants to know if they're still alive, and he goes about this search using Google Earth. And this is what he actually did. He remembered visually details of his environment where he was growing up, so he's using the satellite imagery and he's literally combing the whole of India to try and figure out where his village is and whether his mum's still alive. And this took him years and was this kind of quest, this obsessive quest, which more or less dominated his life.
Now, you mentioned interestingly that sort of twin narrative, you know, film of two halves. Is one side of it stronger, or do those two halves actually kind of complement one another to lead to a pretty satisfactory whole.
I think the storytelling in the first half is very strong. Just the kind of linear story of what he went through and the ordeal and the direction of the kids is very good. But it's the second half that really gives you the kind of emotional release that the story has. The weakness in the second half, I think, perhaps, is Rooney Mara's character, because she plays his girlfriend. She's kind of a composite of three different girlfriends the real life character had. And Rooney Mara's kind of doing the film a favour by being in it. It's not a very substantial part for her. But Nicole Kidman really does bring nuance to it, because she's in the interesting position of being his foster mother who wants the best for him, but then he wants to find his real mother. So there's this kind of sense of, is she feeling betrayed by this? Is she going to be happy for him to go on this search? Does she feel replaced or abandoned by him? And what kind of gratitude is he shown towards her? There's a lot of very complicated feelings in their relationship. I think she does a really lovely job, and it's rare to see Nicole Kidman in this kind of supporting turn, but she's getting justified acclaim for it. So I think the script manages to balance both halves pretty well, and I'm really glad that they went for that linear approach rather than trying to do the kind of flashback style of things, which would have been quite obvious, I think, to have him as an adult trying to remember his childhood experience and doing it in some kind of splintered way. I think that actually would have felt cliched. So they've done well. The director is Garth Davis, who is responsible for Top of the Lake on TV. And
this is his first, is it right? This is his first big feature. So,
that's,
I mean,
right.
How does it, because that's, you know, it's a tough and complex, very emotional story to take on. Does he show that he's at home on the silver screen?
I think he does pretty well, yeah, and he does particularly well with the performances, but it's sort of partly about stepping out of the way of the story, because the story is so strong in itself, and as you kind of realise the kind of climax towards which it's headed, I think it's very hard not to be quite emotionally overwhelmed by it, and the film just needs to step back and not overdo that and not kind of sentimentalise it too much, and I think he manages that pretty well. It's quite a restrained job. It's unflashy. There's a lot that the use of Google is pretty heavy, actually. You know, there's a lot of kind of Google images kind of as we're kind of trying to roam through the digitized streets of whether this is the real village or not and that kind of thing, but I think it uses it pretty well.
What about Dev Patel, because he's had an interesting journey, I guess, as an actor, from, you know, I think when he first started on TV in this country, his mum responded to a newspaper advertisement. Now he's this sort of big star, but he'd complained a little bit about roles of substance maybe not being around. He was worried about being typecast a little bit. How does he fare in this, because he's got some pretty strong reviews himself as well.
Yeah, I think he should be getting nominated for sort of lead actor rather than supporting. That's a bit of a fiction that he's the supporting figure in this film, but it's a really pivotal performance for him and role for him, and he really transformed himself to do it. He bulked up, he grew his hair, he had to nail the Australian accent. It's quite a transformative role. He shows some real kind of muscle as an actor, which I think in the past he hasn't had the opportunity to. So he does shine, actually. I think it's a real game changer for him, if you like using that horrible phrase.
That's fine. We can throw the old cliche in here, Tim. That's not a problem. Another. I don't know. Two thumbs up then for Lion as well. That's out now across Europe. It should soon be released in Japan and other markets as well. Finally, Tim, let's review the new film from M. Night Shyamalan, Split. It's a single syllable, but it's a one-worder. Since M. Night Shyamalan's hit horror movie, The Sixth Sense, he's had, well, I was going to say a series of flops. That is fair, isn't it?
I mean, I would say a gradual downward trajectory.
Okay,
yeah.
That's probably worse. a steady decline. Where does this one go then? Split. He's certainly got some, you know, big names who are in the feature. Has he got it right? Are we on back on the upward ascent here?
I think that the kind of hype behind the film, of which there is some, is that this is a bit of a comeback for him. That's a bit of a return for him, and it does have some things going for it. The main thing it has going for it is James McAvoy in the leading role as this kidnapping serial killer with split personality disorder or multiple personality disorder, and he really goes for it. You don't get to see him playing all 23 of the personalities that this character is meant to have, but he plays a number of them. The problem is, I mean, okay, Shyamalan is kind of raising his game to some degree here after the last few, because I thought he made one called The Visit about how terrible old people are, which is just like one of the most,
and it wasn't a great success.
I mean, really not good at all. And there's been, I mean, obviously The Last Airbender starring our man Dev Patel, which was the worst film either of them have made. So he reached a nadir there, which it would be hard to kind of go below, and this is a slight step up. though it's just so tasteless, and also it's so tacky. It reminds me of the script in Adaptation that Charlie Kaufman's brother yeah. Donald is making, yeah. Which is called something like Split, and it's about like some guy who's got three personalities, and you never know which one of them you're going to meet, and he probably kidnaps people as well. It's just so tacky. And I thought it never surmounted that, no matter how hard it tries, no matter how, you know, some of the other actors in it are quite appealing. There are three actresses who James McAvoy is, three young women who he kidnaps and kind of imprisons in the basement of his house in Philadelphia. And two out of three of them give really good performances, I think. And also Betty Buckley, who's probably best known to film fans as the gym teacher from Carrie, pops up with quite a substantial role. She was in Shyamalan's The Happening, and here she plays the kind of shrink who thinks that she's got the measure of James McAvoy's character, but has not.
Tacky and tasteless. I want to hear a clip. Let's take a listen. This is from Split.
My name's Hedwig.
How old are you?
9.
I've never seen a case like this before.
23 identities live in Kevin's body.
Who are you?
Help me get out of here, Hedwig.
Are you trying to trick me? I'll tell on you.
Aren't you the clever one?
An individual with multiple personalities can change their body chemistry with their thoughts.
Someone's coming for you.
Who's coming?
The Beast.
That's from Split. I don't know, the music tells you plenty. What about McAvoy then? Because I imagine an actor would think, oh, this is great. Plenty to get stuck into. You can showcase your physical acting, you know, your facial expressions, everything. How does he go about what's presumably quite a transformation as he leaps from character to character?
Yeah, you don't often get to see him transform in the space of a shot, if you like, until the end. It kind of saves that little acting trick for the end, and it's kind of like his face scrambles and then you kind of get the next one. I think he's having a lot of fun in this part, and I can totally see why he took it, and he probably hoped that Shyamalan would really pull it out the bag. No blame to him at all, really, and you know, he nails some pretty good kind of stereotypes in each of these individual parts he has to play. One of them's female, one of them we've heard has a kind of voice, a sort of speech impediment, and I think he's doing as much as he can to raise the film and to kind of give you some reason to watch it. But it's the tackiness that sinks it. I mean, okay, back in the days of Psycho, you know, Norman Bates has split multiple personality schizophrenia, you know, the film that kind of got away with it up to a point, had did this terrible kind of psychiatrist spiel at the end to explain what had been going on, but that was in 1960. I feel as though we can't really get away with taking a diagnosable mental disorder now and making a kind of hilariously fun horror romp out of it anymore. I just think it just goes too far in that respect. And I think maybe Brian De Palma would have the kind of chutzpah to kind of take such a tasteless concept and then make something really kind of operatic and crazy out of it. And Shyamalan just doesn't have that kind of ambition. He just makes the kind of tacky, probably will do on a drunken Friday night sort of C movie horror thing that he currently does. So that's what it is.
Okay, so he's very much on the foothills of his recovery. I would say that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, nevertheless, if you want to check out how he's faring, Split is out today all around the world. That brings us to the end of today's program. Thanks, Tim, for being with us as always. That's our good friend Tim Roby. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks to Holly Fisher, our producer, our researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. This program's back on Monday for an arts review. But for now, thank you for listening and goodbye.